It's Thursday, June 10th, 2010, and you're listening to episode 193 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Pat.
I'm still Wayne.
My name's Chad, and Pat almost messed me up again because I was sitting out of order.
Yeah.
And it's throwing me off.
I might be
well,
Chris.
And it just like I said, it's my. That's right, it's Chris.
And then there's
it's
that
my
other
analytical,
guy.
Mathematical mind that has to go in the same order. I'm sitting in Chad's chair. Chad's in mine, so I would go after Dan because that's the chair that goes next.
You sit in an uncomfortable chair, Pat.
I know it sucks. This is a really
well,
nice
which
one.
Is why, Pat,
I like this.
I figure I'm going to do you a favor in that whenever I finally get around to cleaning out this room and then finally hang up some decorations, I was actually going to decorate each wall based on the person that sits in each chair, so they will have something they enjoy to look at throughout the course of the episode. And nice. I have a particular picture picked out to put on the wall that I guess would be that wall, the wall you would normally face.
Awesome.
So
you know what's amusing me is that now that Pat's sitting in Chad's chair, he's talking more.
That's true.
I think it may be the chair.
No, they don't really know that yet because, maybe we'll
we just
see.
Trashed the last episode. Yeah. So. Yeah, then justly so.
There's an irony here in that this episode is about setting up a game for success, which we're going to get to pretty quickly because we have a ton of stuff to talk about here. May or may not even get through it in one episode. And we realized that the very principles we were talking about with the game, we failed to apply to our own podcast. Basically walked into all the same sorts of traps that kill a game. But before we get to that, a couple things real quick. First of all, the Fear the Boot Night of Carnage that we mentioned a couple episodes back, it's a big LAN, I would call it a LAN. It's done over the internet.
You're not using enough words like awesome and really cool. Okay. So start that over, please.
The awesome and really cool night of awesome carnage, really run by Wizard Cool, which they do usually every Sunday night. They just did one that was a whole weekend long, and they had a thread going. I wasn't following if they're talking about scheduling another weekend or changing when they do.
They're talking about changing days. They're getting a consensus right now. But as of right now, it's on Sunday nights.
And so they're not going to do a full week and call it Fleet.
A week of Fleet Carnage? Yes.
But they,
why not?
Since they normally run them on Sunday nights, we aren't able to attend because we are off at our own weekly tabletop RPG session. And so I've been told that they name all the bots when we're not present after us. And I think I may throw them because this Sunday, it looks like our game's going to be off because Dave's going to be at Fleet Week. And so we'll be around. I think I will actually try and join this one. If you're interested in joining as well, we'll link to the thread again. And one thing they are really careful about doing is they stick with games that are, one, common, meaning you probably got this game, and two, these are games that are either cheap, old, or both. So this is not something where you have to have the latest gaming rig and go straight out to Best Buy and buy a $60 game. It's stuff like StarCraft.
Right. Age of Empires. Team Fortress 2 is on there. And we played E.T.
Yeah, and a big, big shout out to Wizard for that. I mentioned in the thread when someone brought up Wolfenstein Enemy Territory that I was a huge fan, and if they did it, I would show up. Well, next thing I know, they have a server ready to go, and the group's all gathered. And
they're like, where the hell are you, Wayne?
And Chad and I were there.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. A really good time.
Yeah, for anyone interested in this, it is a really good group of people from our community that are just hanging out and having fun.
Yeah, they're
not
playing.
Overly competitive. They're playing together. If at all possible, in every case, they're playing against computer players so they can be playing together.
Hmm.
Cool. Only I can get these guys on Left 4 Dead 2, man. That would be awesome.
Yeah, we'd never see you again.
I know.
I can't believe how much you play for 2 as it is.
Did you see my hours I racked up?
No, I haven't looked.
I'm at 230 hours.
Wow.
A game that has, was it 4? I mean, not counting the new one, they just released 4 levels.
I know, it's wonderful.
That's what I do not get is for a game that has 4 levels that all play, I mean, I won't say completely the same way, but it's, you know, it's not like a game
see
where
a zombie, shoot a zombie.
Yeah, it's not a big sandbox game where let's try zombie farming this game or whatever. I mean, it's... Yeah. So it baffles me.
If you listen to the director commentary, the entire inspiration for most of the game, or at least that aspect of it, is when you're a Valve employee and you program these games, design maps, do weapons, whatever, or any video game design, you play your game over and over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
From testing to just seeing if it's fun. And you get to a point to where you would rather gouge your eyes out than play your own video game, even though you love your own video game very much. And so they looked at what are the things that bore us about the games? And how can we make this game to where we would want to play it over and over and over again? And it's stuff like, you know, no set spawn points, and it you'd have to play Left 4 Dead to understand how you can play the same map over and over and over again 20 times, and you'll have 20 totally different
Absolutely.
Games.
Absolutely. Yeah, this past week, I passed the 24-hour mark on it, which was more time than I got out of Asylum.
And while I completely agree with Chad on that, for me, what it is the exteriors, essentially, of the game are done so well. The setting mm-hmm. and the mood, the oh, lighting, yeah. The sound.
Setting,
it just makes such great use of all these things to set a tone for the game. It just makes you want to go back and do it again and again and again.
See, I can't wait till Steam opens up on Mac for Left 4 Dead 2.
Oh, I know.
Because then we can pull Chris off of Xbox, which I'm not going to get in the controller versus mouse debate, but we got something on PC that they don't have on Xbox, which is custom maps.
Yeah, and I'm very excited maps. To try that. Although it'll be a little tricky, I think, for me getting used to a mouse, though, because I'm definitely yeah, becoming...
Especially one with just one button.
You'll get used to it pretty quickly. It is the superior instrument for a first-person shooter.
Yeah. I'm both. I am both a PC guy and a console guy, and they both have their strengths and weaknesses. So, but first-person shooting, I can't do it on a controller, man. I hate it.
I mean, I'll put myself out there. I do enjoy consoles for a lot of games. First-person shooters, I have got to have the mouse for it. The mouse is just the better instrument. It's the more accurate instrument.
Third-person shooters, I want on a console.
Yeah.
RTS strategy game, I want on a PC.
Well, that's because of Lasso Select. I can't imagine playing an RTS without a mouse. But, oh well, that debate rages on and on and on, like hemorrhoids. So,
and it's just about as pleasant to talk about.
Gen Con 2010, Toph Pitch thing, obviously still up and out there.
Toph Pitches!
Something I'm thinking about is what I'm going to run.
Yes, sir.
And I'm definitely bringing the fastest Star Trek game out there, which I think I mentioned in bonus episode 33. Mm-hmm. But I think I may try to replace the Klingon ship with a Romulan one to introduce cloaking and such. Mm-hmm. That takes a lot of players, so that'll be good. It'll be able to involve a lot of people. The other game I'm going to run, since Chris won't be there and somebody has to pick up the mantle, is Battletech. I haven't yet decided what it is I want to run. I'm not going to do Chris's thing because it's his thing. You know, his farmers versus mountain lions or whatever it is that he
farmers
runs.
Farmers win.
But I've got to come up with something. I'm still trying to think what. So if anyone has any ideas or a particular scenario they'd like to see, don't hesitate to hit me up on the forums or email me or something. And
you know, along those
it's going
lines,
to be a big. I'm sorry, Wayne, but it's going to be a big mass game too. It's not just going to be like a 4-on-4.
Yeah, it's probably going to involve 12, maybe 16 players. So
you know, along those lines, if we're calling out to the people on the forums, I'd say if there's anything people want to see any of us run that we've mentioned before, throw it out there and we'll at least consider it.
Yeah, I can't guarantee we'll be able to run it, but yeah, we'll at least...
And also, if you want to run something for your fellow booters during Gen Con, then we have something in the works. We're setting something up for that, so keep an ear out for details.
Yeah, so make sure
Martian Bob, Scooby Thulu, just saying.
Is he going to be there this year? For some reason, I thought he wasn't going to be there this year, but I don't know why. My brain may have just inserted that factoid. It's completely false.
Oh, I hope,
God, I hope it's false.
I hope it's false, too. I hope I'm completely wrong. I don't know where I came up with that
Martian
idea.
Bob and I have a game that we play, which is actually...
Called drinking.
Well, yes. Yes, it is. And it's
everybody wins.
Yeah.
It's a game that he actually plays with his whole family and friends, and it's a game that he is so much better at than I am, although I almost got him one time. And it is not letting the other person buy a drink. And that sounds easy, but all the person has to do is go up to the bar and lay money down. But you have to do things.
He has a liquor ninja.
Involved. It's a liquor ninja. You're standing there, and all of a sudden you have a drink in your hand. He's across the room.
You're in the shower in a locked hotel room by yourself, and you've got a beer. He bought you. You have no idea how this happened.
There's tape of it on the internet.
Yes. And he's sitting across the bar, locked in a booth, completely surrounded by people, and he has not moved for the past 20 minutes, and he just smiles and waves.
He's like
a smug bastard.
We are going to chain him up, put him in a safe, drop him to the bottom of the ocean, and you will end up with a beer in your hand.
I know. We will.
It will happen.
It is.
Chad?
Yo.
I saw something amazing this past week.
Were you jealous of it?
I was, yes, actually.
Yes.
Kind of-ish. Mm-hmm. In my life, there are things I'd like to see. Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, UFOs.
A good XCOM, modern XCOM game.
Yeah, a good modern XCOM game. Well, I'm being realistic. I'm trying to be realistic.
Foot, yeah.
The neighbors that Chad didn't look at when he was growing up.
Yeah, a grown man naked.
He knew them!
You ever seen a grown man naked?
Dan knew them!
That's right.
They went to our schools! Dan, did you
have... You like Gladiator movies?
I did not. All right. All right, Dan, did you have naughty thoughts about My Neighbors? Because
yes,
you
he did.
Knew them. I did. I knew some of them, but I believe
you
the only one of the
man.
Siblings they
no,
had
you're
that
the
was
sick man.
Our age that yeah. I actually saw in class
was Lori.
I must be getting two Mills families confused then. All right, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. So, getting back to things that Chad has done. This past week at our Sunday game, we're doing D&D, and I look to my right, and lo and behold, if I don't see a sight I never expected to see, which is Chad sitting behind a DM screen.
Oh, yes.
Now, it's a DM screen for the wrong game. It's for Hero Quest.
Chad, I can't believe it.
Which is awesome.
It's more of a proto DM screen, too.
And all he has behind it is a bunch of chess pieces and an apple.
It but was nonetheless,
Chad, I'm calling you Zargon yeah. for the rest of the podcast.
And it's like, it's at the most, what, 8 inches tall? It's just, it's
I,
such a
I don't have
DM
anything
screen.
To hide. I'm trying to give Wayne the authentic D&D experience.
Yes.
Here,
and so. So he's hunkered down, hiding behind his DM screen. And so I'm not even the cheating sort, but I'm sitting here craning my neck trying to look by his DM screen just because I can't imagine what's back there. And the answer
yeah,
is nothing.
That's the mystery.
That's right.
It's a bunch mystery. Of chess pieces and an apple.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're partway there. He's got a DM screen. Now we just have to get him one for D&D.
Oh, please.
And get him something to actually hide behind it we're not supposed to see.
Yeah, he didn't
and
even roll his dice behind
get him
it.
A
right
mat.
Out of the table.
And get him a battle mat to actually sit it on top of.
There you go.
Battle mat. Please.
In 192, we started chronicling our progress through this new campaign that we were setting up and starting to run. And in 192, we talked about the process that we were going through to decide what game to run. And where we are going to pick this up in this episode is what we did this past Sunday. And this is an ongoing process, but it's how you can set up a game for success. What you can do before the game even begins, before that first game, when you guys meet up in the Color Animal Inn, to try and increase the chances that this game is going to survive for as long as you want it to survive. And the place that I'm going to start is a point that Chad raised, which I did not have in my notes, but truth be told, I think is an absolutely excellent point, possibly the most important point in this whole list, which is creating a shared sense of ownership.
And I was going to say 8-inch tall DM screens, but that was just me.
It's not even 8 inches tall. It's like 6 at most.
Yeah, it's maybe 6.5. It's fairly average.
But it's the biggest we've ever seen.
It's true.
That's how it is. Yeah,
yeah, it's the biggest one he's used. So, mm-hmm.
But Chad, I wonder if you would talk a little bit about the steps that you took to create a sense of ownership and over the game, amongst shared amongst everyone. And we can all talk about the importance that plays in making a campaign succeed.
One of the sort of design features I had for this game was Wayne wanted to play an established setting. I felt like running a fantasy game.
Well, not a established setting. You want to play an established
system. Established system. You wanted to run. Wayne wanted to run
because since he joined us about a year and a half ago or so,
it's been all homebrews.
And
which
so,
they've been great homebrews, and I love them. And I even ran one of them at Fear the Con, but I wanted to play something published.
Yeah. So we decided, and it was a group consensus to do D&D 3.0, 3.5, whatever.
It's kind of a mix of the two. Yes, more or less.
The only experience I'd had with it was Chris at Fear the Con 2.
Yeah,
and that was
a horrible nightmare.
That was awesome.
Your thighs still sweat with anticipation of how good that was.
Anyway, what I wanted to do, like I said, one of the design features that I want of the game is that I want the players to have a buy-in on the setting. This was I don't even want to call it a homebrew. It is a homebrew setting, I guess, but it was something that was born of a conversation Wayne and I were having. We were talking about fantasy games, and he was talking about, gee, I really want to play a bard, and we started talking about what it would be like to play a bard, and of course, blew that up in our minds of a whole party, not of bards, but traveling minstrels, where you'd have a fighter who is a bodyguard and a wizard who would do magic tricks and that sort of thing, and what that would be like. And then we got into a conversation about traveling. This is very easy. Wayne and I work together and sit next to each other, and we go out to lunch and stuff all the time. So over the course of this week, we're talking about this, like, what would it be like to travel in a fantasy land? And about how there's all these dangerous creatures trying to kill you, and then there's this army. And then so there's this whole framework that we're setting up, right? And it's actually, these ideas are sort of shaping into a fantasy world, and we start sharpening the ends of it. And it was this dialogue that Wayne and I had. And in the first iteration of this episode, Dan points out something very important, is that if Wayne and I had just come to the group and said, hey, we have this idea, and this is this world that we came up with on our lunch breaks, and we're running this, well, then that means only Wayne and I have buy-ins. That the rest of the group, the rest of the PCs, are only bought in as much as they can generate interest in their characters. So, not even thinking about that, but just thinking about, wouldn't it be cool if everybody designed the world? Everybody had a hand in it. So, what I did is I got everybody together on character generation night, and even before that, we started talking about ideas. What did you guys want to see in the world? And I came up with this idea that it was a world ruled by a vampire nobility.
Yeah, and we told you it was crap.
And yeah, it was. It was a total crap idea, and it got shot down. And I think Dave suggested this sort of elder nobles where they are dead spirits, they're evil, and they're trying to do a sort of workaround, a loophole around death. And so they take people in their family or bring people in. When those people reach a certain age, they sacrifice them, and the spirit of one of their ancestors possess that person fully. And then they go on, they use this accumulated knowledge, and when that body dies, the ancestor goes back, and then they get another one, and then they keep living. It's this sort of half-assed immortality, and it's very evil and stuff, but they use that to rule this kingdom. And Pat thought that was a cool idea, and so Pat decided to play one of these nobles, these elder nobles.
At which point you passed off development of this entire aspect of the game world.
Huge aspect.
To Pat.
And I wouldn't say he passed off completely. Like, I'm going to put together my ideas, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a collaborative thing between Chad and I. But I'm going to say, hey, how about this? And, we're going to go back and forth.
Yeah, basically, the conversations that Chad and I had start happening with Chad and Pat.
Right. Mm-hmm. And similar things went on to happen with Dave and the world's religious structure.
Yes.
And I got to take some ownership over this foreign army that they'd been fighting against, because I'm playing a member who was of that foreign army that this
empire fought. The Black Irish concept, they call it, but you're a monster.
Yeah, exactly.
Every player has, I don't even want to call it a slice of the world, this major defining aspect of the world that they as a player design, and so they have buy into the world. On top of that, the aspect of the world that they're designing directly ties into their character.
Well, and one thing that came to my mind as we were mapping this out is there's an article I read a while back on why a lot of collaborative creative projects fail. And in this case, they were not talking about a role-playing game, because to us, it's a hobby. They were talking about more somebody's trying to get out there professionally and do a book or do a webcomic or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they said that part of the reason is, in many of the cases, very few people involved have true ownership over it. There's one person who's calling all the shots. It's their baby. It's a labor of love to them. They want everybody else to buy into that vision.
Symbiote.
But when the other people involved aren't helping create, they aren't getting paid because this is a labor of love, they pretty quickly lose interest. And I think a lot of those same concepts apply to a role-playing game. That if you have the sense that this is the game master's game, either one, the players are going to come in lazy. They're just not going to bother. They're just going to play the baby bird thing I've talked about in the past. Expect the GM to find the worm, eat the worm, digest the worm, and then barf it fully prepared back into their mouth. Or they're not going to care, because the GM is all excited about this concept that the players have no ownership of. And Chad did a great job in this game of parceling things out, which, first of all, as you mentioned in, I think, our first take of this episode, lightened your workload.
Yes, it did.
And gave us a sense of buy-in to where this feels like our world. Now, what if you're running an established setting? Let's say you're not running...
I try not to, really.
But let's say somebody is. If you were running...
Why would they do that?
Let's say you were running a Skies of Glass game.
Well, let's say you were running...
I have a lot of buy-in in Skies of Glass.
Yeah. Well, let's say you're running something really established. Battletech. Forgotten Realms. Okay, something where there have been stacks of books published on what's out there. I think you could still create that, because the fact is none of these things define down to the micro level what's going on every corner of territory in every group. And so you could say, let's take Battletech. We're going to play a mercenary corps, and we're not going to deviate at any point from the canon of the universe, but I want you guys to come up with a story of how you came to be, what campaigns you were involved in, what great victories and great defeats you've had, what the esprit de corps is, what the symbolism is in the various salutes and images that you guys have and use and such. And you could still give them a sense that they own a portion of the setting, even when you're playing in an established world. Second point, setting realistic expectations for the quality and depth of each game.
Well, we certainly would never have a problem with that tonight, trying to record the episode the first time through.
So we had unrealistic expectations. This happens.
I think we had more poor planning than unrealistic expectations. But there has been something I've seen go on in our group, and it may not be equally true of all parties, but certainly I've seen it occur within the group, and I've seen it occur within other groups, which is we don't have a tolerance for down games, or particularly a string of down games. I think we're a little bit too quick to write these games off. We come in wanting a masterpiece out of every game, and if it doesn't happen during one game, we don't care too much. But if after two games or three games or whatever, they're still not masterpieces, we start to hit this point where suddenly we're looking for the next shiny. We're giving up on the idea. I mean, once again, it's not equally true of everybody, but it's the same thing as when you go to see a movie. I'm sure everyone here has gone in to see a movie, had no expectations. It was a B-minus movie, and you walked out really impressed, versus you walked into a movie expecting a masterpiece. It was the same quality. It was the same B-minus movie. And you walked out thinking it was trash because it failed to meet your expectations.
You know, expectations aren't just quality either. Sometimes it's length. I may have the expectation this is going to be a six-month game. Well, you have the expectation that you're going to be running a year-long one. Same thing. You go into a movie thinking this is going to be a two-hour movie, and you leave at, you know, 70 minutes. You're going to be disappointed. A lot of this stuff just needs to be talked out beforehand.
Well, and I hear you on length because that was something that the guys asked me on Sunday, how long is your game going to be? And I couldn't answer the question. I wanted to, but I have no idea. And that's not an answer based on failure. You know, it's like, well, this game might fail in the next session, and I don't know how long that could be. No, I really have never been a good judge on campaign length when I ran game.
I'm actually going to make a little bit correction there, because you said that we all asked
that. How dare you correct
me, sir? But you I actually didn't ask that, because that is actually a question that I pretty much wouldn't ever ask of a campaign, because, again, I'm the guy that likes to play long-running campaigns, mm-hmm. so I'm not even thinking about that. I'm not thinking, okay, is this going to be a short-lived campaign or whatever? I'm in it for whatever it is. And that also, for me, goes along with sort of what Dan was saying before about, you know, you have these games where if something happens and it gets off track or whatever, it's not all up, or you have some silliness here, or you have a down kind of a game. Mm-hmm. That's nothing that's ever really bothered me. That's just sort of happened in my games. There's been ups, there's been downs. Maybe we had to take a break from it, but we would come back to it. It's not the link.
Having a shared campaign length, though, is, I think, important still to that setting of expectations. Because even if it doesn't bother you, and it maybe even bothers too strong of a word, but there are people that are going to be invested in that.
And I get that. So,
and the thing to remember, Pat, in those games, that's what you guys were all expecting.
Right.
You were expecting. That's true. If you had someone sit down at the table that's expecting a 6-month game and you didn't tell them, we play forever for as long as we can, that could throw things off a little bit.
Yeah, because there have been games where I have come in hoping that this game was going to last a year or 2 years and ends up dying in a matter of weeks. Mm-hmm. And vice versa, there's been other games where it was kind of a neat idea, but it was a very concept game. And so I'm like, all right, we can get a couple weeks out of this. And somebody tries to drag it out, and pretty soon just becomes tedious.
Yeah.
And so, I mean,
I would think it would be really hard for the GM to set his pacing if he feels differently about the length of the game than the players do.
And I think it's going to be difficult to keep the players and GM mutually invested if they can't agree on how long this campaign is going to be. I mean, to Chad's point, I don't think anyone can or should necessarily be like, yes, this is going to run exactly 13 weeks and 2 hours into the 14th week.
Yeah, because no one's going to wander into a bar and just start flirting with barmaids when they should be talking to the king for 5 hours.
But I think it's, I think it goes beyond
ballpark.
Wayne. Sure. I agree, but I guess what I'm sort of seeing is that the way I would look at it as, like, saying this campaign, Chad gets his idea maybe for his first campaign mm-hmm. arc or his adventure arc, yeah. and that so it goes for however long or whatever. And then I would say, like, at the end of that, then maybe you would have the sit down with groups, have the candid discussion of, okay, guys, are you guys enjoying this campaign? Yeah. Are you liking the characters?
Well, see,
should we go on? Should I come up with another idea, like whatever you would call it, another campaign idea, or what I would call an adventure?
Well, that's something like, or that a series I plan of adventures, on.
You know,
that's something I plan on bringing back. We do it a little bit. We say our goodnights, good game, or if it's a bad game, we just don't kind of say anything. That's one thing I want to bring back is saving time at the end of a game for a post-game wrap-up to say, how's everything going? Are you liking it? Is it working? Is it not working? What do you guys want? What can I change?
You know, and I think that's a great idea because we do some of these conversations, like you and I will do it through the week, or we'll gather before recording and we'll do it. We're missing a player.
Yeah.
You know, not one guy isn't with us the whole time, so he's missing out on that, and he's being left out of the conversation.
We are particularly bad about not doing the email chain.
And I do have to
most of us get together otherwise.
Speaking of Dave and email, I do have to give the man props. I had these guys give me write-ups on their character and on the world that they're developing. Dave was the first person to get back to me. Everything fully developed, great ideas, all lined out, and he had a bunch of questions for me. And I basically read the whole thing, and I'm like, every question you're asking, the answer is yes. It's awesome.
You gotta be careful, though, with that kind of stuff, because it comes to soliciting that feedback. I think that unless you're specific with what you're asking about, it may start broad, but it's going to quickly devolve into really picking things apart. You know, just going after nits because everybody wants to participate in the conversation. And yes, I agree, you should ask, but when you do those kinds of things, I think that you're gonna get more of what you're really looking for if you're direct about certain things. You know, what do you think of the length of time that you're spending in the city? Do you feel that there's a point to it? For example, that kind of stuff, you got to be really direct with what you want.
Let me ask you this. At first, I was just going to disagree with you as saying, no, I want that very specific feedback. But I see what you're saying. How do you guys draw a line in getting feedback, like after a game, where you differentiate it from a lot of very specific constructive feedback to a bitch fest? And I don't mean that in the players are angry and being mean or they're not. I mean, how do you tell the difference? Where do you draw that line? How do you prevent the bitch fest and how do you promote?
Or the other side of the no one wants to say anything bad about it. So they're just
they don't say anything. Well, they don't say anything to your face.
Yeah. Or they give the compliments, but they hold back.
Well, I hate to sound like a pop psych book here, but I tried to use feeling words and future tenses.
Oh, God.
Well, it sounds stupid, but you know what?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Quite frankly, in many ways, it is.
You have to use active voice when you do this.
It's part of the
Dan, use active voice.
Chad, I feel like I should tell you.
Sometimes a campaign is just a campaign.
Yeah. But no, it's, for example, if we're playing through a game and I want to get the feedback to keep the campaign alive and healthy, to perpetuate its success, not just to set up its success, but to perpetuate its success, I think there is a role to, first of all, let's look at trends. If one guy's saying something, it may just be that one guy. Look for the trends. Unlike Chris, well, I see what he's saying. I think he's right. I would throw it out generally because I'm afraid if I ask specific questions, I may never get to the real things they're loving or hating because I don't know what to ask about them. But the third thing is if I'm on the player's side, what I might say is not, holy crap, that scene sucked, because that's just going to create hurt feelings and whatever and discourage the GM and blah, blah. And no, that's crap. It doesn't need to be done. But what I can say is something like, you know what? In the future, I'd love to spend a little bit less time down in the dungeon killing goblins. I'd really like to see what's going on in the social life of the town.
I'd really like to spend less time in the boring scenes you're serving up to us by the wheelbarrow full and do fun stuff.
But I think there's always a positive future-looking way of phrasing that.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, yeah, I realize it's a little bit political, but look, feelings do matter, okay?
Unless you're talking about strippers and they don't have feelings.
Well, they're not. Yeah, they're dead anyway.
So when you're getting this feedback...
We're talking about strippers now? Right. Wait.
So when you just woke up.
Yeah.
They play Fear the Boot and strip clubs.
So when you're getting this feedback, awesome. If there's something that you don't feel is going right as a GM, but your players are telling you that's what they're really enjoying, how do you deal with that?
Well, let's back up a step before even that. Is I think there's a conversation that needs to occur before the campaign even starts, which is the players need to understand what the GM wants out of the game, and the GM needs to understand what the players want out of the game before the first games even occurred. With our current game, we had to go through a process of sort of discovery of what everyone wanted out of the game. Chad wanted to run a fantasy game. As we were negotiating out the setting, there were a few points that were brought up that we asked him if he would change. And most of the time, the answer was yes. But there was a couple points where the answer was no. And what we got out of that was there was a certain experience Chad, as a storyteller, is trying to generate. The Game Master had something that attracted him to running this game in the first place. And if the Game Master's not getting that out of the game, if they're not getting a chance to explore a certain setting or certain themes or create a certain type of feel to the game, this game is never going to succeed because the GM will never feel excited about running it. This was the mistake that I made in the Apocrisis campaign that died before this one came out. When we sat down to make characters, I let you guys make your characters. And in that regard, we did a pretty good job. We followed the group template. I asked you guys what you wanted out of the game. We'll get back to both of those points here in a second. But at no point did I think about what I wanted out of the game. And I ended up creating a scenario where you guys were off kind of doing things in a particular way in the universe that really did not excite me. You were these independent salvagers where the story I wanted to tell,
space hookers,
was about politics and war and all
and
these
space hookers
and space hookers. Yeah. Sure.
And that's where we were really on different pages, because we were all really into the story that we were getting. We were into what we were doing, but it wasn't the story you wanted to tell.
And I was beating my head against the screen of my laptop every week trying to write the game, because it's like, how the hell am I going to get these guys over there to do it? Here's this great story I've got in mind to tell, and these characters have no place in it without being totally square peg round hole just pounded into place. And it's important to know what the Game Master wants out of attempting to run the game. Now, hand in hand with that, you also need to know what the players want out of it. What kind of plot do you want? What are you looking for in the setting? What annoys you in the setting? If we're playing Forgotten Realms, I don't ever want to see or hear the name Elminster. There's been a couple games where I've had characters where I really wanted to play them out in a certain way. I wanted them to take on a certain role in the world. And the Game Master screwed me out of it. Sometimes because he didn't know. Sometimes because he didn't care. The former's my fault. The latter's his fault. But nonetheless, these things have to be communicated.
I like what you're saying about that. And again, it really is important to really to sit down and establish this before you get rolling. Like what you just said with your character that got sort of screwed out of it. It's, you know, it's really important to sit down, GM and player, and say, okay, here's this character concept I have. This is what I would like for it to do. You know, you should go back and forth and agree on that. And in that case, like you said, that should never have, it shouldn't have happened. I mean, he should have said, well, that's not really going to work because it's probably, you know, there are certain things are going to happen that character just wouldn't work. But, you know, so yeah. It's a two-sided street. Like, I think is what you're getting at, because it is, you know, you need to have that communication, that open communication on both sides.
And I think these post-game conversations are absolutely critical to long-term survival of a game. But I see it as like car maintenance. It's better off having a car that needs minimal maintenance, excepting there's always going to be some. It's going to need some tune-ups and some repairs along the way. But I think you can head off a lot of these problems by building a good car to begin with.
Yeah.
As opposed to rolling out a half-assed designed lemon that's in the shop all the time. Mm-hmm. Group template is something we have talked about a lot on this show. It's still out there in the resources section of our site. I cannot emphasize it enough. Players, make sure your characters have a place in the world and a reason to be together. We've beat this to death throughout the life of this show, so I'm not going to beat it to death now. But I cannot tell you how many games we have, probably the number one killer of all of our games internally has been group template. If I look over the history of my gaming career, with our current group, it's not been much of an issue. But with prior groups, it has always been the issue, is these people just did not have sufficient cause to be together, sufficient direction in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Something else we talked about prior to starting off this campaign was mortality, because I think this fits into the expectations of what both parties want out of the game. Can players die? And if so, how and under what circumstances?
And is there resurrection, or if they die, did they stay dead?
See, and that's actually where I approach the question from, is I know they can die, and I know there's all kinds of ways to die, but it's really a question for me is, are you going to have a resurrection there? And if so, how does it work? Because it's easy to figure out how the characters can die. It's more difficult.
Yeah, that's the simple part.
It's more difficult to figure out what are the politics in bringing them back, you know, or is it even possible, depending upon, you know, your setting. And I think it's important to at least internally as a GM decide how that works. You know, maybe the players and the characters don't necessarily know all the ins and outs of how that can be happened. They may know that it is A, possible, and B, obtainable but it may have an inkling of how difficult or easy it might be, but that might be all of it. In and of itself is a bit of a discovery. But I think it's actually, you should really approach it from the opposite end first.
Yeah, I asked these guys, I laid it right on the table. I'm like, do you guys want character death or not? And I laid out the pros and cons of both, and I told them that I personally didn't have an opinion on the matter. It's not my characters. You guys are going to be slaughtering NPCs wholesale, so, you know, whatever. But the sort of unanimous consensus was a lot of hemming and hawing and justifications, but the ultimate answer was no. They did not want player death because they were putting too much into the characters to chance them dying. I trust them all as role players. I trust them all to be in character and to role play adequate levels of self-preservation, and was fine with that.
Yeah, and I think that's coming off a little bit wrong. Because
I don't want the listeners
I don't want the listeners to get the impression that we're all playing immortal characters that can't die.
No,
that's how we're going to play it. Like, yeah. I don't care. I'm a godlike character that can't die. Yeah. It's not that. It's just that, yeah, as we're saying, yes, we can die. We would prefer not to.
Prefer not to die.
But, you know, yeah.
You know, it's funny. Still, I feel the exact same way about real life.
So do I.
Well, yeah.
I think, though, more the underlying question is how cutthroat is the game going to be? For example, I mean, I don't want to tie up on this mortality thing too long, but it's not just can players die. But let me reemphasize the second part of the phrase used before, which is, and if so, under what circumstances? You know, I think most of us would accept going into a game that, okay, there ought to be some kind of fear. There ought to be some sense you can't abuse the system. You can't throw yourself in front of a tank because the GM's not going to kill me. You know, whatever. But the question is, do you want a game where the four of you walk into a room and it's just some random bunch of orcs and in a meaningless encounter and one of you dies for no good reason in terms of the plot? Except for the fact that you roll
the random encounter table, orcs come up, you have the combat, and Mage Boy gets smeared.
Yeah, and the GM decides to play a little bit more cutthroat to challenge you or be a dick, whichever. And
that's just how it rolls out.
Yeah, that's how it rolls out, and all the orcs charge the back line and smear the mage. And the mage is now dead. And it's kind of like, it's an attitude, but this fears into a lot of things. Character creation. If you roll a screwed up character, do you get to re-roll the character? It's an attitude that will pervade every aspect of the game. How cutthroat is this going to be? And there are some people where they do not feel the game is realistic or challenging enough if death is not a possibility. I'm a hero, but that's why I have stats and equipment and all this other stuff. I live in a dangerous world doing dangerous things. I need the constant threat of death looming over my head, because I can just be walking down the street and a kobold pushes a piano out of an upper story window and kills me.
You know,
they need that. And there's nothing wrong with that.
And then there's other people like me where, as a GM, I hate the concept of a TPK. I don't want that. I am trying to tell a story and I want my players involved in that story. And that my story, my main characters are all the guys sitting around the table. Now, we're five games in, everybody's having a great time, and their entire party gets wiped out. Totally fair, legit, by the rules, fair on my side, fair on their side. Everyone nods like, yep, we got wiped out. Story stops. It's done. You have to start over. Even if you're playing the same world, same setting, same everything, same general plot line, everybody makes new characters, it's a different story now. And that's a bummer for me, man. It's like reading a book. It's a 400-page book. You get to page 150, and the entire party dies. Every character in the book dies, and then all the rest of the pages are blank.
Yeah. To me, this whole mortality issue is, it's almost more of a sort of an unspoken thing in most groups, I think. You know, because, again, unless you're just playing with the cutthroat dick of a GM that's like, says, hey, man, whatever the dice says, that's going to be it. And if I roll 20s, you're dead.
Well,
it's like what you're saying.
Well,
you're trying to tell a story with these characters.
I don't think that that's being a cutthroat dick. I think that's a pejorative. I think that there are people out there who, that's how they have fun. I mean,
I was playing an online game. With John. He was GMing it. He was running a campaign where we were all playing goblins. He wanted to kind of explore this weird sort of quirky game where we were playing a little warren of goblins. And we had our own little hierarchy and squabbles and all kinds of things threatening us because we're goblins. We're the bottom of the food chain. And when I was playing my character, by third or fourth level, rolling out my hit points, I had like 7 hit points. Wow. And if I was GMing, I'd have been like, dude, re-roll your freaking hit points. That's ridiculous. You're at this level and a longsword hit can kill you.
Yeah.
One hit can kill you. But with John, that's not the kind of game he runs. He runs, you know, you get what you get sort of game. Mm-hmm. And it's not a bad thing. But I had to have that expectation going into it. And that character, you know what, ended up dying.
Yeah.
Big shock. He died, and it was even a relatively inconsequential thing he died on. It's just some random trap killed him. Splatter, sure. Gone. Here was a character I'd put personality, thought, effort into, and he just got splattered on some pointless trap. But that's just an expectation.
Yeah. Isn't that kind of the life of a goblin, though?
Pretty much.
Well, precisely.
You know, if that were an adventure...
That was his name, was Fodder.
Yeah, if that were an adventure going to save the princess from the dragon and that sort of thing, yeah, that's pointless. And, but to me, that's like, wow, you know, that's so real.
Here's the thing.
Real.
For anyone who's ever
fakeness.
Heard Johnny G talk or played a game with him, you know going into it, that's what you're going to get.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Let's go back to just like any other relationship. A gaming group is going to survive or die on three things. Communication. Mm. If that bothered me, there was a conversation that needed to occur when we were sitting down where John puts out, this is what I want to get out of the campaign. I want to really capture the disposable life of the goblin. And I need to put out, I'm concerned about investing in a character who's going to die anyway. And we have to reach some kind of compromise or consensus or concession or whatever on one of these sides or both of these sides so that we have a campaign that moves forward. The reason this was not problematic, even though this is not the type of game I would run, is I knew going into it, this is what I was going to get.
Sure.
I knew going into it, and there were things that he had done throughout the ownership stage to let me take ownership of it. I had created an entire subsection of this goblin society. The bard I was playing, his only performance skill was called Doom Wailing. He wandered up and down the hallways of the Warrens, bitching about life and telling people that if they didn't behave and kowtow to king and goddess, that their chance of survival was going to be even worse than it already is. And John let me dispel this entire aspect of this goblin subculture of doom wailing.
That's funny.
And so, you know, he still developed that ownership. Next big point is I think you can do a lot to ensure the life of your game by identifying and avoiding your game killers. Now, in a new group, the most you have to look back on is possibly your prior RPG groups. If this is your first RPG group, it's a learning experience. I can't tell you what to do except be prepared to learn. But if you're in a group you've played with for a while, look at the things that have killed games in the past for your group. And it's going to vary from group to group just because the people are different and the reasons are different, situations are different. But if you can identify what kills your games, you can start to try and find solutions to getting around them. Let me run through some of the ones that I've seen kill games within my current group and past groups. One of the first ones, and this created something of a little side debate during our game this past Sunday, is too much out of characterness. The game master's trying to set a scene. He's trying to do a description. The players are sitting there cracking jokes. They're just doing obnoxious and obscene things. They're making dirty puns out of all the NPC names.
Or they're not even at the table. They're not at the table. They're not paying attention.
They're not paying attention. They're talking to each other. They're chattering.
Pat stands up and drops his pants.
That was probably
that was
game.
Totally in character, so I beg your pardon.
But they're flicking things at each other across the table. But all this kind of distraction, I'll tell you, the GM sucks a lot of the energy out for me because it sends a message the players don't care. They're not invested. I hate having to sit down, and when I write the game, my number one concern every time I have to name something is, okay, I'm a second grader. How do I make this dirty? Okay, I can't. We have a winner.
It's like that old Nicolas Cage kid from SNL when they're trying to name their baby. It's the exact same
thing. That's right.
So Chad brought up something that we have used in some of our previous groups, and it has a cheesy name.
Long time ago.
And it had a cheesy name we called the Dome of IC. And the Dome of IC was that basically once the game master says, okay, Dome of IC, everything that occurs from
there's
this point forward.
There's even a hand motion involved in it. You make it like a dome with your hand.
And you have to say this long, drawn out.
Dome of IC.
You turn 4 syllables into 16, like it's a revival or something. But you, from this point forward,
welcome.
Anything that is said or done is considered to have been said or done by the character. And the point of this is not to be a jackass. The point of this is not that if you have to go to the bathroom and leave to go to the bathroom, the game master has the king execute your guy for trying to walk off during the conversation.
Or pissing in the throne room.
Yeah. Or this is not supposed to preclude somebody from stopping the GM to ask a rules question or something like that. It's not meant to do that. But the point is to keep people on task. So, number one, they're giving the game their all. And number two, the GM doesn't feel hung out to dry like he's running a game that nobody likes anyway.
Yeah, to me, this is just a nicely agreed upon way for the GM to say, okay, guys, cut the shit and let's get back to the game. But instead of saying well, it that just, way, it's, you know, instead of sort of being...
Stop wasting my time.
Exactly. Instead of being, like, you know...
If you want me to run this game...
Contrite about it, you're saying, hey, okay,
yeah,
let's all... focus and let's concentrate now. And it's just like you said, it's a little bit cheesy, but it's better than saying, hey, shut up and pay attention.
Yeah,
because this is, you know, why you get more flour, you know, get more flies with honey than vinegar kind of a thing.
This right is on. Why I
believe in the gun and a kind word thing, but
well, you know,
you saw what happened to Al Capone, so I guess that doesn't work.
It's true.
But this is where I got into that whole thing of I would just stop running the game and let people get out of their system because it was so demoralizing. It's like, if you guys want me to run a game, let me run the game. If you don't want me to run a game, fine, we'll just play around. But I'm not going to throw myself into this if you guys don't even care.
Yeah, and the problem with that is that, I've seen you do that, is you'll stop it and allow it to go. And unfortunately, none of us, or the majority of us, won't ever pick up on that and say, oh, yeah, we're supposed to be gaming and come back. It's just,
we just think you've lost interest in running it.
So, yeah, it's just the stone rolling down the mountain, gathering moss, turning into a large moss ball.
What are you talking about?
I thought we were going to analogy Sisyphus man or something in there, and I don't know.
Sisyphus got run over by Pat's moldy ball. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought we were going to have this kind of wisdom of philosophy, in here. But
no.
Yeah, I'm rolling it all together tonight.
Uh-huh.
All right, so... the next two are kind of related, at least they're similar, which is... Do a test run of role-playing to see how the group gels. Now, don't set up a scene that's part of the story. Because if you find out that this group doesn't gel, or somebody upon trying out their character does not like the character they developed, you want to be able to scrap this. So this has to be some kind of inconsequential non sequitur. The plot's not even started yet. You guys just happen to run into each other somewhere. Here's a little bit of something going on. Let's see what happens. And people get a chance to feel out their characters, to get a sense of whether they're going to enjoy playing this individual or not. We've not done this in a while, but Chad, this is something that we used to do in one of our previous gaming groups all the time.
That's what I tried to do on Sunday, but we didn't have enough time.
Well, we did something else instead.
And you know what? I have never done that, ever. Well, I have never done that.
Something else it helps with is the first game, which is the worst part of every role-playing campaign.
How do you,
it doesn't feel like first game anymore.
Where do you start the game?
You pop the game's cherry.
So. Yeah, exactly. True. You've already had a first game.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't a first game. If you carry the stuff over into the real first game, you've already been through that breaking point.
Mm-hmm.
What we did do this past Sunday, the related idea, which brought up some new problems, is if you're in a system where balance is difficult, or if you're in a group where balance is really important to the group.
You know, balance is what we ran into, but I don't think that that's a requirement for doing what we're about to discuss. I don't know how many times, gone into a new system, which apparently not many because I haven't done that many games, but gone into a system, put everything down on paper, and then when I actually go to play the character, it doesn't work out anything like I thought it would. Same thing with video games. You kind of, you put stats here and there and you start.
I can't tell you how many MMOs I've tried to get into the beta for one reason, because I know I'm going to hate my first character. So I want to screw them up. So when the MMO launches, I can play the character I want. It's been a while, but I have done the same thing in role-playing games where I created a character and for purely mechanical reasons realized the character. It's not a matter of he wasn't as powerful as the guy next to him. It's a matter of he can't contribute in any meaningful way.
He just isn't fun to play.
Yeah, this character cannot do the things I wanted him to do or expected him to do when I made him. But to stop beating around the bush, what we did was to give Wayne a sense of how D&D plays. We did a few mock combats.
And I still have no idea how it plays.
Yeah, that's true.
That's because he was using the wrong GM screen.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it.
And what came out of those mock combats was apparently not education of Wayne, but education of us, if we realized we had two radically broken characters because Chad threw us up against things that should have One should have challenged us. The second should have mopped the floor with us, and we exterminated them in very short order. And realized
1 to 2 rounds, yeah.
Yeah, and realized pretty quickly that two of the characters were way broken.
Yeah, when I say I didn't get the feel for what it was like, it was because I didn't really get around.
Yeah, you really never had a turn to act.
I did one thing. Well, I did two things. The first thing I missed on, and then the second time I actually did it, and it was... It contributed to the fact that we were able to mop the floor with the second group of things.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what we found out of that was exactly what you said. It's, and I think this goes back sort of it will harken back to the group template, because got these characters, these four different characters, that their backstories and everything gel really well.
Mm-hmm.
Cool characters, great ideas. Everyone is just great. Unfortunately, though, what we did is there were some concessions made by Chad, like I said, to Dan and Dave. And making these characters, and what happened is it allowed their two characters to be not obviously on paper, but in practice, a lot more powerful than mine and Wayne's characters.
And I'm not a balanced person. I don't need a balanced group. But this exposed another problem. The setting that Chad had set up that we were all throwing a part of, we are wandering performers. We're wandering the wasteland. Well, we're now wandering the wasteland, and he can't figure out anything to throw at us that's a challenge. Because
part of what Chad, not to speak on your behalf,
sure.
Since you typically have a lot of trouble elocuting what it is you want to say.
It's the chair.
He's in Pat's chair.
Yeah. So. I'm just finding
what you guys are saying is so fascinating. I just have to sit here and listen.
That's me.
Not a lot. Making exactly too much noise with your damn ice and your Mountain Dew. Yeah. But what... came out of, yeah, exactly, Wayne, you're right, that one of the things that came out of this was that one thing we needed out of this game was we were supposed to be traveling performers that had a persistent sense of danger,
mm-hmm.
and we quickly realized two of the characters in particular were so unexpectedly powerful that any sense of danger Chad would attempt to create would have to be purely imagined.
Yeah.
Because unless he's constantly chasing us around with elder dragons, it was going to be like, the town guard says you can't leap. Well, yeah, right.
Like one of the things I point out, I'm like, I'm a person who thinks that you can have a superhero game with the Shoveler and Superman in it, and it's perfectly fine. If everybody has that, that expectation going in, perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with the two of them being together in a story. That story, however, shouldn't be a back alley crime story.
Right. And with this game, it was like, I asked the guy when it was pointed out that, wow, you guys are just really freaking powerful. I said, well, what's going to happen? You're in a town and something comes up in character and they want to throw you out of the town. And then three town militiamen comes at you and they have their bent spears and they're like, get out of our town. And you look at them and you're just like, you can crush them under your thumb. And the suggestion was brought up, well, maybe they're not just town militia with bent spears. Make them more powerful. Give them mages. Give them something to challenge us. And I'm like, you are wandering minstrels. You're not an army, but you're as powerful as one. And there's a cognitive disconnect there.
And this is what's funny. This is the exact reverse of the problem we had in the Apocrisis game,
mm-hmm.
where I was trying to run a game at a certain power level and a certain level of, okay, you guys are this deep in the political and military structures of the world, and I needed that to take you guys certain places and show you certain things. And I put you guys instead, or let you guys instead, choose to play salvagers who were not really capable of playing at that level, who had no contacts at that level.
And my perception was you were running Starship Troopers, we were playing Firefly.
Yeah, and this was kind of the reverse of that, where we're supposed to be playing this ragtag band of surviving by our wits, mm-hmm. and running from town to town. And instead, we were a more stereotypical adventuring party ready to go out and kill stuff and take its loot.
And if we hadn't have run that sample, we would have been playing through maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks before we get to the first combat. And Chad would have this combat ready and throw these things at
us. The king tells you, get out of my country.
Yeah.
And the captain of the guard comes out.
And I throw his castle at him to shut him up.
Yeah.
To me, I think the lesson that we learned out of this, really what it gets to is that you need to, whatever system it is that you are running,
mm-hmm.
you need to make sure that you're familiar with it. And that's what we're experiencing, because this group hasn't played D&D in a long time, and like in Wayne's case, ever. It's been a while, so we've got to get back to it and see and remember and, you know, shake off the dust and remember.
I warned but, you, right, said, when you go D&D, it's going to take the game to a different level.
This is a good idea for any group, and when you're choosing this, you've got this new setting. If it's not something that everyone at the table has been playing for a long time and are very familiar with it, this is a good idea to do because you can shake out some bugs and realize, oh, wow, this is really not at all what we thought we were getting into here.
You know, and Chad hit on something there when he said he warned us about this going in. If you're going into a game that your GM is not excited to play that system, you're not setting yourself up for the long term success. And I mean, we are not taking our own advice here. We're not taking the advice I'm trying to give, but
I'm fine with running.
Well, that's the reason I would disagree with. I think your point is absolutely correct. The GM has to be invested in the system. The only reason I don't think it's relevant to this situation is because...
Because we're Fear the Boot.
Well, it's because Chad himself, as a human being, is system agnostic.
Yeah.
We discovered a problem in the system that needed correcting in order to create the kind of game we wanted to play and he wanted to run. But I don't think per se we made a mistake by picking D&D because that was what you wanted out of us, was a chance to play an established system. And heavens, if we're going to pick the most universal, ubiquitous published system, where else to go but D&D? Yep. And that's something we were getting out of this. We just have to make some concessions that in order to run D&D and to have the type of game we want to play, okay, we've got to rein in two of the characters.
Tone it down. Yeah. And you know what you and Dave have said? It's like, okay, we're going to dial it back a little bit. The 24 damage, 10-foot long ultra hit punch at third level, let's dial that back. The killer wolves that can rip through a castle portcullis, dial that back a little.
Chad, he can only do it three times a day.
And he had a point, though. I mean,
it's not a point. The last point I've got here on my list is prepping yourself for down games, missed games, or possibly even GM burnout. I don't think there's a whole lot you can do about the missed games. Try to make gaming something of a priority in your life. Not a huge priority. Don't be insane. But look, it's time with your friends. It's time for a hobby. They're counting on you to be there. They need you to run the story. Do try. I think people should try and make this, just like any other social obligation, some kind of a priority.
But on the other hand, as a GM, my advice to you, because I've made this mistake, I actually make this mistake all the time. Do not base 90% of your story off of one character in their background.
Yeah.
Because the day that character doesn't show up, you are going to have a really hard time.
Actually, yes, and that brings up another point we definitely need to cover before we wrap this show out. So maybe this is my second to last point. When these things happen, when you're missed games and that kind of slows the game down because you were off for a week and don't remember as much, when the GM starts to kind of feel a little bit of burnout or starts to feel a little worn down, you have to have some mechanism built in for bringing the campaign to a temporary stop, a good stopping point, not for a night, but maybe for a few weeks, stopping and talking to the GM about ways we can reapproach the story or rearrange things to get back into it. Maybe even having a situation set up where somebody else can take the game and not screw up the main plot, but run some little side episode or side adventure just to give the GM a break. And this is something that you're going to have to perpetuate along the way. But I think up front, you need to have discussions about what is our mechanism for coping before this occurs. It's like an auto insurance policy. You get it before the car wreck, not after. And in the same way, I think this is something you have to deal with in detail once the car wreck occurs. But I think you ought to at least have these conversations up front of, okay, when these problems happen, how are we going to deal with them? And this may go back to setting expectations once again, but just have some way of handling this.
You know, and if you're missing weeks, maybe that's a good time to go back a couple episodes and the ARG aspects. Add in some of that outside of the game stuff, some emails, some letters, something to get people thinking about the game when you're not actually meeting.
Or turn it into a multi-platform game. We can't get together this week, so we're going to do a little bit of play by email just to keep the game going. We can't meet on this Sunday and can't meet on next Sunday and can't meet the Sunday after that. So for the next couple weeks, we're going to temporarily switch to a play by post or play by email. This is the sort of mechanism you can come up with. Maybe your group will hate that kind of thing, but you can come up with something to prepare for this. So then the other thing that Chad started to hit on is this is something that heavens, I think, is absolutely necessary to a game, at least the type of game that I want to play. Players, when you're creating your characters, give some open hooks for the GM to work with. And the importance
my players are giving me whole worlds. It's great.
And the importance of this is it will make the game feel personal. It will give the GM ideas of how to motivate you. It will give the GM ideas of how to make the game more meaningful on an emotional or experiential level to the players. And to Chad's point, the pitfall a GM has to be careful to avoid is latching onto one character's background questions so heavily. His missing brother is now the crux of the game, that when this guy drops out or misses 3 weeks, suddenly the game has no direction. But sometimes the players cause that. I've had this in games where the game focuses on one character because only one guy bothered to give me anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where we're going to go ahead and wrap this one up. Sunday was a busy day for us, and a bunch of things came out of that we're going to come back to. Plus, we still have our topic of familiars and animals and other such things in games that we've got a bunch of thoughts on.
We even have new experiences with that after Sunday.
And after Sunday, we have new experiences with that. But in the meantime, you guys have great games. Have a good week, and we will catch you next time.
See you later.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2010. Listeners are free to use the show in a non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.